You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Community Connections with Alan Collier on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And of course, being the second Wednesday of the month, we have our legal hour, and we have with me today Grant Hutchison and Jordan Wong. Welcome, guys.
Ho, ho, ho.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
And of course, we should mention, of course, Grant is a big honcho at Hutchison Legal. So it's good to see you guys again.
It's nice of you to describe me that way, but I'm not that big, am I, Jordan?
I mean, you're pretty big.
I didn't actually mean in size. I mean, you can't get much higher than Grant Hutchison.
You know what's work and Christmas got in common?
No.
That all the little people do the work and the fat guy in the suit gets all the credit.
Probably true too. Now, let's get down to it. We've got a few topics to cover, but the first one was we had somebody ring us last time before the show and to say that it's about bail. Somebody had been put on bail, not over a period of time. Like, they'd committed a crime, they got bail, they'd commit another crime, they got bail, and they're on their third lot of bail. They want to know, first of all, how can you get bail so many times? And secondly, what's the most times a person's had bail? Not sort of one bail 1 year and 2 years later another lot of bail. We're talking about three times over a period of a few months. So who's going to tell me?
Alrighty. So first things first, that person has a very good lawyer to get them out of that a few times. So yes, in our sort of legal system, we have what we call the presumption of bail. And that sort of means that it's the starting position that a person, when they are charged with a crime, that they will be granted bail. And that's your starting point.
Yep.
And so when you have that, it stems from the idea of innocence. We are innocent until proven guilty.
Yep.
And that's what we're based on in our legal system.
Yep.
And so that's why until a person has proven that they are guilty, their liberty shouldn't actually be deprived. And hence, bail is that starting point.
Yep.
So with that being said, there is what we call an unacceptable risk, and that's more to the point that the person will not show up to court for their hearing.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, the prosecution, it's their job to show that to the court, that the accused would not turn up for their bail or for the hearing. And so if they can prove the person is an unacceptable risk of not turning up, then they won't be granted bail. Now, even though in this particular instance they've been charged with offences and gotten bail however many times, it doesn't mean they've pled guilty. It's not that they've been convicted of any crimes, and so that's where the presumption of innocence is still there. And so even though you can be charged with whatever crime it is, until you are proven guilty, there is that presumption of innocence and there is a presumption of bail.
Surely is there no longer, because it used to be at one stage of the game, if you broke bail, that in itself is offence. Is that no longer an offence?
When you break bail, and depending on what the offence you did whilst on bail,
yep,
there is then, it sort of shifts to that particular person to what we call show cause. And so there is also, on top of showing cause, there's depending on what offence was committed. And so the show cause category is where the accused will then have to show that they should be granted bail. So they have a chance to then say their piece of why they should be granted bail. In that sort of situation, you're right that the presumption of bail is sort of set aside.
Yep.
And so it shifts to the accused to then show it. There's also what we call the exceptional circumstances, which is we're talking murder, treason, that sort of line where... Yep. That presumption of innocence is also gone.
Yep.
And then they would have to show exceptional circumstances that they should be granted bail instead of having that presumption as a starting point.
Right. So what's the most... have you been able to find out who, or we don't want to know the person, but what's the most amount of times a person's been given a bail?
Unfortunately, no. Just because there's so many cases in Australia.
Yep.
But in terms of... There's no... there's not necessarily a limit as such. There's no like, oh, you get 10 bails and that's it sort of deal. Everything is sort of based
so
on
you could,
circumstances.
Like a person, like this person got 3, but that's not to say that he couldn't have got another 3 or 4 on top of that if he kept on committing until he gets convicted the first time. Is that what you're saying?
Not necessarily convicted the first time, but it's more so to show the reasons why, and that's why I say he has a very good lawyer, to say that to get him out of whatever situation. And it also depends on what the crimes he is committing. And, you know, there is a line between, say, murder versus stealing a Kit Kat. And so depending on where that line is, and obviously it's everyone's different, it'll be up to the lawyers and the prosecution to sort of battle that out and convince which way should be going for bail.
So somebody could... It's not impossible for someone to have been on bail 6, 7, 8 times.
It's not impossible. Not likely, and it's not going to be the majority of situations, yeah. But you can't rule anything out, to be honest.
All right, we'll move on.
Sometimes bail... Just let's think about bail for a moment. Sometimes you're bailed on your own undertaking to appear. Yep. And other times there are conditions set around bail.
All right, so let's just... I don't want to jump in, but let's ask that question. All right, so why do some people have to put up a surety by somebody else? Is that because there's a doubt they're going to turn up? So you got to explain bail now, so just tell us the difference. Yep.
Well, I think you've probably seen some films from the US where there's the bond people who then go out and hunt down the people who are absconding because... they're like an insurer that's undertaking that someone will put up a certain amount, and but they effectively want to hunt down this person. I think there's been a couple of films around this. In fact, I think there was a whole series around it at one stage. And so you're basically giving your own undertaking, but it could be bail with $1 million. You can't put up $1 million, but somebody else will guarantee that if you pay them. And it's like an insurance bond type of thing. So those people have a vested interest in then hunting you down. It's like the Wild Wild West. In Australia, there can be conditions in terms of reporting to police or doing all sorts of things. The conditions can be as imaginative as the magistrate is concerned. It is around that general presumption. You should be innocent. You're seen as innocent until proven guilty. If you admit to being guilty, that's different. So an admission of guilt or a plea of guilty will change all of those things as well. So I suppose...
Could you still get bail then? So you said, well, I'm going to commit... I'll plead guilty to this offence when it comes to court, but I still want bail to lend. Are you likely to get bail like that?
I think you... Well, certainly they don't like to... Well, if you plead guilty... Well, the question would be, is there likely to be a criminal... Is there likely to be incarceration or imprisonment as a result of that? Because they're not going to imprison you if that's unlikely. So I think there would have to be a sentence likely. And then if you plead guilty, they should be able to hear it pretty quickly there's... Normally the contest is around whether someone's guilty or not. And that's a hard thing for the prosecution to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. So if somebody says, I admit that I'm guilty, normally it's a plea bargain, they admit to 2 of the 4 charges that the police have put up or whatever. And so those things can then be dealt with. And no, most things don't end in a custodial search. Most things that come before the court don't end in people. We have a low incarceration rate compared to other places like the United States. We have a lower incarceration rate than there would be countries with lower incarceration rates, but we don't like to imprison unnecessarily. But some people would say we don't imprison enough.
Yeah.
Some I haven't heard anyone say that we imprison too often. I think some people would say maybe I'm mixing in the wrong circles, all the right circles. The getting that right balance is one of the things about the. Judicial system. I remember we had a case many, many years ago where the magistrate put somebody in jail straight away, and we thought that was unreasonable and incorrect, so we just immediately appealed to a higher court and the person was released. There was no custodial sentence. But for the time that they were in, we had to apply for the person to be allowed out while that appeal was heard, because it would seem odd if you appealed and in the meantime...
Your time's coming up.
Yeah, particularly given the justice system takes so long. But you look impatient to move to another topic.
No, not so. I've got a couple of sponsorships announcements that come up, and one you'll be very interested in.
You were young.
Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and we've got Grant and Jordan both from Hutchinson Legal, and we're talking all things legal. If you've got a quick question, 59615 9915, 59615 9915, we'll get answered for you. We won't be sending them away with a question today because they won't be back until the second week of Feb. So, what's this tendency evidence? Tell us a bit about that, Grant.
Oh, well, thanks for asking, Alan. The whole question is what evidence can be used in a court case? So, in a criminal case, when can you use, or what type of evidence can be used? And that's set out in the Evidence Act. Right. There was a gentleman who, there was a man who was convicted of murdering his 2.5-year-old stepdaughter, and he was sentenced to imprisonment for 36 years with a non-parole period of 27 years. The child died as a result of blunt force trauma to her abdomen, and there was no dispute that it was could only have been three people, the mother, the stepfather, or a nephew. Right. And so the question is, could they use tendency evidence? So not because quite often somebody can be murdered without another, or somebody could be murdered without anyone else seeing it. So without the direct evidence, can there be that this person has a tendency towards, so to identify which of the three would have done this, can we look to the tendency of these people?
So how do you prove tendency? I'm intrigued by this.
No, I can see it's well, in this case, they looked at the tendency of this person to cause harm to the child. So in one case, they said there was the Burns evidence. This was where he, 10 days before the death of the stepdaughter, he'd placed her in scalding water, hot water. Ooh. So now that's one thing by itself might not have been enough, but there was also the case where the child had complained. This is a two and a half year old, had complained to relatives that to the effect that he had bruised her right forearm, had hurt her neck and punched her in the face. So when you combine those two and you say, well, which of these three did it? Now, the person who was convicted said, that's not enough. That's not enough to just say because of this and this that you can identify me as the... But the High Court determined, yes, that evidence was sufficient, and so the conviction was upheld. Interesting case. So
even though there was no DNA or any eyewitness, it was just purely and simply because of the fact of what he'd done leading up to the case.
Well, I think the issue would have been there would have been DNA of all three people, yeah, all around the scene. The court knew it could only be one of the three people. So one was more of an, you know, we presume was more of a nurturing, the mother, yep, and then there was the nephew and this other person. Look, the question is, can they be satisfied beyond reasonable doubt that the person had... He said, look, you need to prove that I placed the child into hot water knowing, with the intention of causing harm, not just that I placed the child. And the court, in the end, determined all of the facts, all of the circumstances, and said, no, there's enough evidence here to uphold conviction. The conviction stood. So it's an interesting one. I think it's one that's not as easy to show, but it's still an interesting case to bear in mind. It's probably not the right season to be discussing it, but anyway.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more.
Someday I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? A women go and men wonder. Can't you hear the thunder? You better run, you better take cover. Six foot four.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and we've got the legal hour up until 1 o'clock. Then 1 o'clock, we've got Heidi coming in to talk about the Anchor Christmas Appeal. And then 2 to 3, we've got the Choice Tunes. I've got somebody coming in that you all know. And while I'm talking to you about Choice Tunes, Grant Hutchison, we did his Choice Tunes probably 12 months ago. So if you go onto our website, www.yarravalleyfm.org.au, and on the front page you'll see podcast. Click on that. The second page on the right hand side, if you look up there, it's got Choice Tunes. Go there, and if you go down quite a few of them, you'll find Grant's life, what he's been doing, and his life through music. So have a listen to it. Right, we're going to talk about the spent conviction scheme. This intrigues me.
Yeah, look, Alan, one of the things, so we've already looked at the idea of bail, so the presumption of innocence before people are convicted of an offence, yep. And then we looked at that case where tendency evidence to convict. But what about after you've been convicted? How long should your conviction follow you around? What do you think?
It would depend upon the severity of the case.
Yes.
If it's minor, like shop fitting and that, I would reckon probably 4 or 5 years. But if it was something really serious, I would have thought 10 to 15 years because, I mean, that's what you said before. Someone might do the same thing again.
Yep, absolutely. So
what's your views?
Well, I was going to let you know what the Victorian Parliament did in March of last year, yep. March of 2021. Oh, look, I think it's just discussing philosophically, yeah. if we decide that something that used to be an offence is no longer an offence.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Then should the people that were convicted in the past still have those convictions? Yep. And quite often in those cases, the convictions are basically expunged or they're spent.
Automatically go to.
So, well, they can be. I think you need legislation to bring that into effect. But that makes sense, doesn't it?
Well,
we as a society don't consider what you did any more an offence. So whether it was...
So I don't want to get into this, but like you go back, I don't know what the act was, but you couldn't have had same sex,
yep,
20 years ago. So with that, as soon as they passed that it was now legal,
decriminalised.
Good word, better than mine. So does that automatically expunge all that?
It wouldn't have automatically, because you can still have an offence. Let's say there was the offence of treason. And then one day we moved to a case, or treason against the crown. But yep. Then one day we moved to a republic. There can't be treason against the crown if.
Oh, yeah.
But still, at that time, it was an offence and should still be treated as an offence. That is terrible. How do we properly manage these things? So I think there are some things where the conviction should still be there.
Yep.
Because it still shows an attitude towards authority, even though that authority may not exist. But you're right, with the same sex. People that were charged under that, and then as a society we're saying that's no longer an offence, yep. Then you would need a separate piece of or you would need it in the legislation to specifically expunge the records of those people that had been convicted.
Would you say you'd have to actually...
deal with it, yeah.
Each one?
Oh, not each person.
But each criminal offence.
Yeah, you'd need to get rid of those people convicted between these. And how far do you go back? Did we bother to eradicate the record of those people that have died 100 years ago? You know, where do you do these things? So I think the idea of spent convictions is intended to reduce discrimination and disadvantage that have been experienced by Victorians, and particularly First Nations or Aboriginal Torres Strait Islanders, due to historical or minor criminal convictions. So how do we make sure those can be... There are some serious charges that should not be off your record.
Yep.
You know, murder...
What about, say, shoplifting a 19, 20, 21-year-old? That really shouldn't be held against them as a 40 or 50-year-old person, should it?
Well, you're talking like an advocate for the...
No, I'm not.
...for the former criminals before you were ready to lock them all up. No bail, no need, just straight to jail.
Yeah,
don't pass go, don't collect $200. Just And now it's look, I think there is it's a matter of balance getting these things right. So the legislation seeks to do that. So effectively, a spent conviction provides for the limited collection and use and disclosure of spent convictions. So there can still be the police still need to know. It's not like the police should be deprived of knowing about convictions in the past, even if they've been spent. But should they be things that you have to disclose when you go for a job?
Yep.
So if silly decisions made by a, by an 18-year-old, should it be affecting you in your 30s or 40s? No, you'd like to think not. But at the same time, in my office, I don't want to. No offence, I would not take the risk of somebody who's stolen money dealing with being in charge of your trust. You know, if you send money to us, I don't want people who've fraudulently manipulated accounts to take money and then be in charge of the trust accounts of my office. I can't afford it.
No, well, let's look at the other way. Supposing somebody had stolen money and then by the time they're 35 or something, they want a job in a bank.
Yeah, so that's... If it had been a bank job, then clearly that's just too close. We're talking philosophically, not the legislation at the moment.
Yep.
But... if it had been somebody who had stolen some baseball cards or not baseball, basketball or football cards as an adult who was immature but now had grown up, then you'd like to say that's behind them. Let's rule a line and say that's it shouldn't constantly follow you because too many people don't give you a second chance.
Yep.
So as society, we're saying, when should a second chance be given? And we'd like to think that minor things that have happened to young people convicted doesn't continue to haunt them. Of course, there's currently suggestions around raising the age of criminal responsibility.
Yeah.
That's on around the place. So therefore, you couldn't be charged with criminal offences if you're... I think it's currently 10 and some are moving it to 14, is that right?
Yeah.
So I think that's happened in two places. Anyway,
just got to take a quick break.
Please.
Catch up on a couple of theses, and then we'll be back with more. I've got a question for you then.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present and emerging.
listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections with Grant and Jordan from Hutchinson Legal. Grant, when you were going through the different things about getting rid of the getting rid of the convictions, quite a few years ago, I was an honorary probationary officer many, many years. And back then, and I'm keen to know what the law is now, back then, I think if you got caught during the time you're on probation, that automatically became a prior in the courts. But once you'd served your term of probation, whether it might be 6 months, 12 months, 2 years or 3 years, it couldn't do any longer than 3 years, then you could no longer use it as a prior conviction, but it sat in the background and the courts could be told before whatever they sentenced or whatever they did. Does that still apply? What happens if a person's on probation? I'm particularly talking about young people.
Yeah, I think what you're referring to there is with probation that effectively when you're on probation, you're still subject to the court, so that you've been sentenced by the court to an offence, and they're waiving their full entitlement is probably the wrong word, but the full extent of the punishment. And so they're letting you out early on probation. So therefore, the reality is you're still, your conviction is, you should immediately, the presumption is that you could be put straight back in.
Yep.
But, so the court should be aware of that. But otherwise, it's a presumption of innocence because you can't be told. If people were told, if the jury and or the judge was told of prior convictions before they considered a subsequent offence, then automatically there's a predisposition to find that the person must have, they're criminals. Because I don't know whether you've ever sped on the road. I assume you might have accidentally sped once or twice, but you don't get caught every time you speed.
No, that's true. Yep.
Believe it or not, you don't get caught every time you shoplift. You don't get caught every time you...
don't tell people that.
I'm not talking about you or me.
No, I'm talking about the listeners. We don't want them shoplifting.
No, we don't have to encourage you. But you don't get caught every time. So when you're up on a charge, it's easy for people just to put a class of criminal on somebody if they know of previous convictions, whereby you should always have that fresh start, that fresh opportunity to... Or really the emphasis is on the prosecution to prove beyond reasonable doubt that you did it.
Yep.
That'd be about right, wouldn't it, Jordan?
Yeah, so the prosecution's role essentially is to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you did something wrong or something against the law, as it were.
And that you did the crime, not someone else. So, but we still haven't answered the probation. Does that, after the term probation, does that still expire? Or
I would have thought after the original sentence, because probation conditions can go a lot longer than the original sentence. Remember Chopper Reed, I think there were, well, let's not name, there was a person who was told, oh, look, we can let you out on probation now. Yep. And he said, no, thanks, I'll serve my full term. Because he knew that it could be only 6 months to go, but they might put probation conditions that go for 3 years that restrict his movement. So he said, I'll just do my time, thank you very much.
And then I can walk away.
And then he can walk away without any conditions. Does that make sense? So probation conditions basically hook you back to the original offence because effectively you're being given a dispensation on the basis that you're being allowed out. Different to bail being allowed out.
Oh, no.
It's quite different.
But does it still... Does it, after 3 years, does it still disappear? Because it used to do that.
Yeah, I'd need to check. Our criminal lawyer, Phil Hayes, would love that question. You've met Phil, haven't you?
Absolutely. Well, maybe you could write that down and get us an answer for next year, because I'd be keen to know that, because that's what it used to be. At the end of the 3 years, after you'd serve your term of probation, which might be a year or two, and then for 3 years after that, they could use it as a prior, and then after that, it just... disappeared.
Yeah, okay. No, that's good. But with turning back to convictions, you can make an application to the Magistrates Court from now on, or from July, if at the time, this is back to spent convictions, if at the time you were aged between 15 and 20, and when you were sentenced, and that was a with conviction penalty, because quite often you're convicted without a with conviction penalty, and as long as you've completed a 5-year crime-free period. So you can go off to the magistrate's court and say, please, can we have that spent? Or, and also, if the person was 21, if the person was 21 years or older when they were sentenced, then they must have completed the relevant crime-free period of 10 years otherwise. So if they were 21 or older, they need, but then they can make an application to the court and say, can I have this spent? Remember, if you're travelling to the US...
Yes.
It's, if the question is, have you ever been convicted? It's not, have you still got a conviction? Have you still got a conviction recorded against your name? So I imagine the correct answering, well, you'd be skating on thin ice, because what does the US authorities expect? It's their country, you're moving into their country, their question, and how do they interpret that question? But does a spent conviction mean you don't have to record it for the US authorities? I imagine you'd need to ask the US authorities. It's not an Australian question.
We'll take a quick break.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And welcome back to Community Connections. Jordan, you've been sitting there. We haven't let you say much, so you're going to talk a bit more about spent convictions, aren't you?
Yeah, so I was just going to chime in about the employee aspect of it. Grant's been talking a lot as an employer, someone coming into his company, but from, I guess, my perspective as a potential employee of his...
Yep.
With the whole...
Potential? I thought you were working for
you. Yeah, well, I am, yes.
But as thinking back to the days.
Exactly, back when. But if you're an employee and you are, say, when you did something when you were younger, you want to have a chance. You want to be able to go into your first job and say, hi, I'm looking for this job. But you don't want that criminal charge that you stole your Kit Kat when you were 10 years old hanging on your head.
Yep.
So from that perspective, this scheme is intended to help sort of reintegrate you back into society and have a chance at a normal, well, I wouldn't say normal, but at a productive and good life. And so with that in mind, what, you know, this scheme helps that person or these people that have made mistakes, as we all have in the past, I'm sure, to reintegrate and to become a person of society.
Fair enough, too. Well, I guess that it probably harks back a little bit to what I was saying before. If you're a 17, 18, 90-year-old who've just done a bit of shoplifting, and I'm not an advocate for them, but you wonder, you know, like you can hardly hold that against them as a 40-year-old applying to become a lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. And at the same time, there are obviously lines of how serious your crime was. Obviously, if you murdered someone, that might be a different conversation.
Well, it would be a lot bigger conversation, I would have thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Particularly if you have murdered your employer.
Exactly, yeah. Then we're going down a different path there.
But, oh, Grant, yeah. I often do that.
But when we're talking, you know, you're in your teenage years, you went to the local shop, you saw a toy or something that you wanted and just, you know, nicked it. And not that I want to promote that happening, but you really want this to be your career. You turn, you know, 20, 21, you go to university, you decide you want to become a teacher or whatever profession. And the first question they're going to ask is, have you ever been convicted of a serious offence or whatever the phrasing is?
You were asked that question, weren't you? Because there's what's called the Board of Examiners. He had to go to the Board of Examiners, and please, if there's something you had to disclose to them, now's not the time to tell me. But you were asked those questions.
Yeah, for lawyers, it's a higher bar for that.
So even if you've been, even if you've got a parking fine, you meant to tell them anything that's...
Well, see, now, that was my next question I was going to ask you. Is, you've just answered on lawyers, the same thing with the police? Are they higher levels of accountability or disclosure, should I say, than what, say, if I applied to go and work in a local servo or a local bottle shop or something? Are those professions like that, lawyers and police, got a higher level?
Well, we're effectively, remembering, we've got the separation of power, the executive, the judicial and the legislative. Anybody involved in either making laws or the enforcement of laws should have respect for the law. The fact that you don't. So if your job is moving, I was a young man working in the clothing industry. I think it was a Storman and Packer. No one asked me any questions about criminal convictions. And I'm not saying it would have been an advantage to me, but that wasn't the question that they had front and centre. It was, you know, did I have the muscle power to move things from here to there? And, exactly. So I think that's a little bit different. But I do see people that have gone through through jails and then come out the other side, and how do they effectively, how are they given a new chance? And sometimes there can be very limited career opportunities available to them. So we don't want that, do we, Jordan?
No, and obviously there is a bar for setting for lawyers and policemen and that sort of law side of things, that where we are held to a higher standard in terms of ethics and responsibility.
Well, you're going to try and enforce the law, aren't you?
Correct.
We're exactly. Officers of the court.
Versus, say, a retailer who just is there to sell clothing or shoes or whatever.
But I wouldn't say that that makes us better than other people. It just means there's a standard, that there's a requirement that we have to jump through certain hoops. Look, can I say, sometimes the most honest people are people that... they've never worked as lawyers or anybody else.
I think local janitor.
I know somebody locally, Peter and Kathy Dell. They've just received their Christmas card, and they're just good, honest, salt of the earth people that are part of the.
I was wondering what you were going to say there.
Good, salt, and they're very honest.
Well, swallowed some air, guys. Unfortunately, our hour is just about gone. We're down to about 30 seconds to go, so.
Well, did you want us to finish by singing something?
No, no, I do not.
Come on, Grant, let's hear a verse.
I just want to say, first of all, thanks to you, Grant, because you're the person that lets the people come along every month, and we have a lot of fun with them, but we've all learned a lot over the few years that you've been with me. We know the law a bit better. We're not legal people, but I wish you both and your whole team all the best for Christmas, whatever people's beliefs of Christmas are, and have a safe and happy New Year.
A joyous one to you and yours, and the team here at Yarra Valley FM. They do such a great job, don't they, Jordan?
Absolutely.
Well, we tried to give you a bit of a hard time at times. But
I think as long as you don't go near certain celebration days, we're fine.
But bye.
Christmas is a good day.